I'm speaking with Herb Hadfield. Herb is an artist, a statesman, and a man of unquestionable integrity. Westport is proud to have such a caring and thoughtful citizen have his home here. I'm Mary Giles, and as Herb and I talk together, Westporters of today and the future hope to know as much as we can of this highly principled young man who has served our community in so many ways. Herb, where were you born?
I was born in Fall River, Mary.
Yes.
But I always felt that I was Westport was my origin, because evidently when I was born, I was a very sickly weakling, you know, and had problems, pneumonia and things like that. And the first summer of my life, my father, who was a pediatrician, felt that I needed fresh air and sunshine and the best. So we spent that first summer on Cadman's Neck. I think it was in one of the Darling cottages. And so I regained my health, and I guess Westport gave me the...
All this nice...
Gave me my life.
Yes.
You know? So I've always felt that I've owed Westport something.
Yes.
And I've always wanted to live here.
Yes.
I didn't move here until I was about 18.
Oh, you didn't?
But we spent every summer here.
You were here during the summer.
Yeah, either on Horseneck Beach. We used to spend summers on East Beach, Horseneck, until the 38 hurricane.
Yes.
And then after that, it was in Westport Point.
Mm-hmm.
We'd always rent a cottage or someplace. And then it was about 1948, I guess, because I moved into Bob Baker's house.
Yes.
Grace Hartley, excuse me, Grace Hartley Howe was his grandmother.
Yes.
She was postmaster.
Yes, yes.
And I rented the house for the winter. It was sort of a house-sitting job. But I rented the house, and the total rent every month was I would go up to the post office in Fall River to Mrs. Howe's office and take the electric light bill in. And that was my
that's
rent.
Not, that was
usually
rent.
About $5 a month then,
yes,
believe it or not.
Yes.
And that was my total rent, but I spent a couple of winters there.
Just where is... Now, is that where Mary Baker...
That's right, down on Cape Byle Lane.
On Cape Byle Lane.
Yeah. The Browns have that
house. Yes. I can remember that very well. I spent a good deal of time there. It was a very nice place.
Yeah.
Very attractive.
I stayed there until 1950 when the family bought the property down at Westport Point. On 1992. Main Road, and then I built the little house down and back.
Down near the river, toward the river.
There was a river down there then, but because they put the highway through about the time I finished the first little house.
Yes. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Highways come around.
I'm lucky it didn't go through the house.
How about your education as an artist? You are an artist. You work in many media. You are a sculptor, a painter, a craftsman of all kinds. I mean, I think of all the beautiful things you've done.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Well, I think you're terrific master. No, that's not true at all.
No, I went to Swain School of Design when I came out of the Army. And I did four, 5 years at Swain School of Design. I went back and... At the time I went there, we had a commercial art course, and I did the 4 years of that, and then I went back for 1 year of oil painting with Frank Raposa. And then later on, sometime later, I went to Bradford Durkee College and to get my degree. The Swain School just gave a diploma, they didn't get a degree. And at that time, I was thinking about teaching. So I got my degree at Bradford Durkee College, and then I went to... Boston University, working on my master's. But then I got married at the same time, and
so that didn't
no
work.
Masters.
No masters, no. Well, before you were married, and even before you went to Boston and began to decide that you wanted to teach, you had done some magnificent painting.
I loved oil painting.
That's
my favorite. I've gotten away from that. I've gotten into Scrimshaw, but now that Scrimshaw is going so commercial and so cheap.
But you're Scrimshaw. I remember that marvelous dolphin.
Well, I prefer to call it almost
sculpture.
Whale ivory carving, yes, rather than scrimshaw. I think scrimshaw has been misused, abused, and, mm-hmm, you know. The true scrimshaw that the whalers did was, it was a native art.
Yes.
It was something that was primitive but beautiful.
Yes.
And sincere.
So subtle, too, in comparison to what they do
right
today.
And it was so sincere.
Yes.
I guess that's the only way you can describe it. That's okay, but it had its own beauty, regardless of how crude it was.
Yes.
It had,
yes,
that beauty of sincerity.
Yes.
And but today it isn't. There's no more of that.
No,
it's all so commercial. And
it's sharp and hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to make it very colorful, and they're painting on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to get back to painting. That's, mm-hmm, that's my dream now.
Yes.
I really.
Yes. Well, you are also a scientist and an animal lover. I mean, you've done an awful lot with study of birds and,
yeah,
taking care of animals that were wounded. Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, I don't know what it is. Ever since I was a child, you know, I found an injured mouse or a wounded bird or something like that. I just had a sort of an empathy for it, so I tended to want to heal it. And my father, being a doctor, was a very handy thing because,
yes,
he would prescribe the medicines, and he had a salve that he had concocted. He and a druggist friend, I've forgotten what it was, but it was a white salve, and it seemed to cure anything. And I saved a lot of little animals that had cuts or things like that that had,
yeah,
been caught, you know, mauled by cats or dogs. And it just became a natural thing.
What are some of the kinds of pets you've had? I know you've had a variety of animals that you've taken care of and nurtured, and then they, yeah, become pets.
Yeah, they do. That's the trouble. It's very difficult to put them back to the wild because sometimes they just won't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, the building that's going up, people are a long way from their job. So, mm-hmm, a family of middle income or less has to support two automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to support an awful lot. It costs an awful lot of money to live in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Taxes are high. You have to have a school.
Mm-hmm.
So those problems, because I haven't been into those too much, except verbally.
Yes.
Just hoping that people would pause to consider things before they give it away or,
mm-hmm,
lose it.
Well, it means a lot of new thinking in terms of city planning, doesn't it? That's right. It means a lot of new thinking. I mean, cities don't have to be the dreadful places
they
are.
No, cities could be, you know, New Bedford has all been torn down, and that could certainly be built into a beautiful city.
Yes.
It's all the area to do it. And city living wouldn't be that bad. I suppose I could accept it again if I had to. But I think I would like to see some trees and,
yes,
you know, some parks and things like that, so that you don't.
I had an interesting experience. I was in Cambridge the other day, and I saw the new Pusey Library. And the person I was with said there was a beautiful green field over there, and people walking in it. And they said, "That's the new Pusey Library." Well, it's all underground. And we went down into the library. It's the most light, airy, spacious. Trees are growing in wells and all. So that if you begin to think of a city as up and down like that, with lots of open space and parks where people can walk on top of buildings that are really not penthouses, not,
okay,
up in the sky, you can see what cities might be
like. I think the underground houses are very definite thing for the future.
Mm-hmm.
There's one down in Brewster, the Cape. I was in that this last summer, and it's tremendous potential.
Mm-hmm.
I think anywhere, and you have a hillside, certainly a southern exposure hillside, an underground house is ideal, because,
mm-hmm,
you can open up the south side,
mm-hmm,
and you get the solar,
mm-hmm,
lighting and everything, and so certainly the solar heat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it's all headed, if we have the sense, I think, to pause and accept new ideas.
Yes.
You know? We have to have change. Change is nature. But I think rapid change is cancerous.
Yes.
I think that's the only way to describe it. Anything,
yeah,
that grows too fast or uncontrolled is destructive.
Well, let's get back to the landing a minute, because last evening a friend whom I was visiting with, who lives near the landing here at Hicks Bridge, is worried for fear a marina or something might be there. What do you think? You know the Hicks Bridge area, of course, very well.
I think she's referring to the east side of the river,
mm-hmm.
east side of the bridge, where Jim Vaughan had his marina. Well, no, it wasn't a marina, it was a boatyard. And the Landing Commissioners have control of a small area over there, just as you enter that. It's a very small landing with that present launching ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And the launching ramp has been impossible to maintain. It's too steep there, and it's on a ledge. And the rains come down the road and wash all the pebbles onto it, so it's very slippery for the cars. The ice cuts out the bottom of it mm-hmm. every winter, mm-hmm. so that it's very difficult to keep it going into the river. So the ideal place for a launching ramp there would be over where the railroad tracks are, so Jim Vaughan's launching track.
Mm-hmm.
And then, since Jim has passed away, that lease has been vacated, mm-hmm. so that now that land belongs to the, is under the control of the selectmen, mm-hmm. all that Jim Vaughan had. And I propose to the selectmen that that could be made into a town landing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care whether we control it, who controls it, as long as the town is restricted to townspeople only.
Mm-hmm.
Because the town people in the town of Westport don't have a place to launch a boat.
No.
There's not that many people that would use that area, but I think those that would want to mm-hmm. should be allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be cleaned up. And, mm-hmm. and I don't think so much in the idea of a marina.
No.
I'm not thinking that, but I'm thinking of a place where a Westport resident can come and launch his boat, go fishing,
mm-hmm.
and enjoy the river, hopefully in a environmentally sound way.
Yes.
But I think most Westporters are very responsible and feel responsible to the river. They realize the beauty of it and the health of it
mm-hmm.
and the food possibilities of it. So I think keeping it down to natives, I don't think you have too many problems.
No.
It's the outside.
Is there any way we could keep it down to natives?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's town property. That's town property.
And if it has to be policed or something, wouldn't it?
It has to be policed now.
It does.
Sure. I mean, you're always, people say, well, you're a landing commissioner. You have control of the landing. But that's not true. The policing of the landing is done by the town police department.
Mm-hmm.
They always, anytime there's a problem, we always end up calling them. We
mm-hmm.
all do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, we've been very lucky in this town in that direction, too. And police and fire departments, we have had the best.
Yes.
And I think they're perfectly capable of handling the situation there. They're overworked, probably. But here again, if it's restricted to townspeople,
mm-hmm.
all you have to have is your dump sticker or your beach sticker on the car that yes. identifies you as a town resident.
Yes. And if you don't have that...
If you don't have that... And those are free. I mean, mm-hmm. the dump sticker is certainly free. And
yeah.
that makes it you identifiable.
Yeah.
And you don't get a ticket.
No. Now, shall we go... You have nothing to do with the dump. But
well,
the dump is a problem, isn't it?
It's been a problem in my mind for years and years. It's in the wrong place.
Yes. Tell about that a minute.
Well, unfortunately, there are chemicals and PCVs and PCBs or whatever they are, these new plastic components. Mm-hmm. That are very deadly, plus mercury and other heavy metals that go into a dump, in a landfill dump,
mm-hmm.
and then they're covered up. Well, these things break down, and they leach out.
Mm-hmm.
And where that dump is a brook runs right down there, right through Elna Trips.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one that runs down behind that and runs across the road and down through Johnny Babbitt.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going right into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're taking all these chemicals. Every time you get a heavy rain, it's seeps down through the dump, and I think they're carrying off all this poison and dump, this chemical, to the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the River Improvement Commission, and have been, and I know in the past there was a study, some testing done at the foot of the hill,
mm-hmm.
and right by Hicks Bridge was the highest mercury count in the river.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's coming off the potato fields, I know there's mercury used in some of the pesticides,
mm-hmm.
and whether that's running off the potato fields from Bones and Smith's, or whether it's coming out of the dump, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there are going to be more tests.
What do you think we should do about the dump? There are lots of
ideas.
Well,
unfortunately, we buried a bomb because mm-hmm. you can't take it back.
It never can be changed.
No, and what is there whether it's a 70-year half-life or what. Mm-hmm. You know, how long does those chemicals take to break down? Mm-hmm. Well, as long as they're breaking down, they'll be going into the river. Mm-hmm. Now, how much effect they have on shellfish and fish, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And we can study that and find out, but when we find out, it just makes us more knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't protect us.
No.
If we move the dump today, it's still going to be active, you know.
Mm-hmm. Would it be better, though, to move it today than to wait and move it later?
I agree. But where do we move it to, you see?
Well, that's what
Westport
I wonder.
Is a fascinating town because it's one great big watershed.
Yes.
No matter
everywhere
where we go,
is a little brook,
it's either
it?
A swamp or a brook. Mm-hmm. And they all lead to the Westport rivers, either mm-hmm. east or west.
Mm-hmm.
You can go up to the Westport Auto Theater. All that area up in there, all is watershed that goes down to the Bread and Cheese Brook and ends up in Westport River.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing up through Tiverton and all of that area. Westport's problems come from Dartmouth, too.
Mm-hmm.
The Nokichoke River comes from way up in the Shingle Island area.
Mm-hmm.
All those bogs up in there. So any pollution between the spring that begins that Nokichoke River and the Westport Harbor, any pollution that comes along is headed for the Westport River. So we can start to clean up our own. I think we have to ask our neighbors to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically Dartmouth on that Nokichoke.
Yes.
But then you have, every time we put in a new road, we put the drainage right into a brook, and then all the automobile chemicals go, gasoline, oil. we compound it every day.
Yes.
All of Route 6 from Westport Factory to the Dartmouth Auto Theater, all of that is drained into Nokichoke, mm-hmm. Nokichoke into the Westport River.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those automobile poisons.
Oh, boy.
We're under a tremendous pressure. I just don't see where the reversing point is.
No.
Because if you accuse one person of polluting, then how can you say, well, you shouldn't do that when this is allowed?
Mm-hmm.
I
don't know whether this is has anything to do with it at all, but you remember Mr. Fyle?
Oh, Tony Fyle.
Tony Fyle. I don't think this answers this particular problem in any way, but he kept talking with us about towns in Germany that lighted themselves, heated themselves, and so on with all their wastes. Now, of course, there was pollution, I suppose, from these wastes as they were burned. I don't know what they did about
them. No, they didn't burn them. They composted them, and then the gases from that are used for
heating and lighting.
Heating and lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a coming thing. This country is just awakening to the use of waste. And boy, we're the most wasteful nation in the world. You know, there's a funny paradox, though, that I see coming now. We're developing these huge plants to process waste. You know, there's one now that breaks down garbage, and mm-hmm. for every 1,000 pounds of garbage, you get 55 gallons of oil,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. But so we're in the waste processing business now. We're thinking about it, and we're developing the technology to process the waste. But in the same time, now we're basing everything on the saving things instead of wasting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now we're going to conserve.
Mm-hmm.
So if we conserve, we're going to have less waste.
Then we won't have as much oil.
That's what I mean. But this is a paradox. I don't know. And both are great ideas.
I think
the conservation one is the one I go for the best.
Yes.
I think we should conserve.
I think
we waste things terribly.
Yes.
Food, clothing, everything is wasted.
Yes.
Fuel.
If we conserve, we can't conserve everything.
There
might be enough left over to have.
Well, I just think that here we are, probably I think at the peak of our civilization. I see signs of breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely do. Take this cemetery situation down there on Drift Road, you know, where they want to move that,
mm-hmm.
the Tripp family cemetery.
Yes.
Well, someone once said, and I'm paraphrase it, but it was...
I think to explain to the tape recorder and people who listen, you might... Nobody's mentioned it. Could you tell a little bit about that?
Well, that's a family that owns the property now is developing it for house lots. And that little cemetery, that was a sand pit, and
mm-hmm.
it was brutally abused.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tripp burial ground is they took the sand all around it and left that mound sitting up there with this burial ground.
How old was that?
Well, that goes back to the 1700s. Mm-hmm. That's a long way back. That's some of the founders of this town.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, it was left, and trees grew over it. Mostly sassafras, I think, last time I saw it. But anyway, this family that had bought this property, somehow or other, I don't know how they did it, but through the act of legislation in Boston, got permission to move this cemetery because they want to make that area into a house lot too.
Mm-hmm.
But in my own opinion, I think that wouldn't be so necessary. There are other empty lots. There's loads of empty house lots there, mm-hmm, that haven't been sold yet. I don't know why this is necessary to move this thing. But anyway, they got permission from the legislature to move this. No, as far as I can see, they're not one of the Crick family were notified of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly it comes out that the cemetery is going to be moved and the bodies are going to be moved and just up and see you later. Tuck them in somewhere else.
Yes.
Which to me is...
it's not conservation, certainly.
It's
disgusting.
Well, as someone once said, that the you can tell the condition of a society or civilization by the way they treat their dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I just do not see that we should move anybody.
No.
I can see if they come across one grave that is unidentified, mm-hmm, so on, and you move it to a respectable place, possibly. But a whole family, a founding family...
it should have a wrought iron fence around it and beautiful planting and so on.
Yeah, I remember.
Be honored.
But that's, I was riding through a sonnet on a bicycle once and I saw this, all these trees. It looked like there might be a little cemetery there. And everything was disheveled and the stone wall was falling down and everything. And I pushed the brush apart and there was a gravestone in front of me and the words on it said, Perpetual Care.
Oh!
And I think, somewhere it's...